Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Today we discuss birds and how to serve them. Wait, that's a typo. How to see them. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about birds. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas bird count for the National Audubon Society in years past. We always get a lot of bird calls, so to speak, calls about birds and bird calls on the show when Rich is here. So get in line early, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC Vox Pop. Rich, welcome back.
Well, good to be here. Nice day out there today. Good for the birds.
A little cooler than the last couple of days.
Yes, that's good. And talking about the heat and the like, the birds can handle it. They go into a bit of a siesta and just wait out the hottest part of the day and get active again in the evening. So many of these birds spend the winter in the tropics.
So they're used to this.
This is okay.
Any surprises that you have seen visitors that you don't usually see this summer?
Well, around here, not necessarily so. I mean, this is the in from the ocean is kind of I don't want to say boring, but it's predictable. But down along the coast, there's all sorts of things that can go on, and things show up. They come in from overseas and work their way. They get as far as they can without getting out onto the ocean, and then start moving down along the coast. And
that's so they go north, Newfoundland way, and then come down, or
that's right. They come in through Iceland and Greenland, and then actually across from Siberia, and clear across the continent, and then down the east coast. So things like that can happen, and. As we speak, there are a number of exotic, let's say, shorebirds. And the reason for that is right now we're approaching the peak of shorebird migration.
At this time of the month, this
middle
time of
year? July, right in through. The good ones come through mainly in July, August, and at beginning of September. These are one where you can see some of these Siberian sandpipers begin to show up or. But it's mainly, and it's also the adults. So a lot of those are in their breeding plumage, which makes them a lot easier to identify.
Very interesting. So, we discussed this in the last couple of shows and didn't do it. I understand that you have a mystery bird call for us today. Now, if you haven't played along at home yet, every now and then, Rich will give us a mystery bird call. When you call in with your question, take a stab at it. The number is 800-348-2551. We have one open line right now. It won't last long. If you get a busy signal, keep trying. 800-348-2551. All right, Rich, what is our mystery bird call today?
Okay, well, let me give you a little lead into it. I heard this not long ago.
Okay.
And it took me a little while to locate the critter. The source of this call.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Goes like this. Well, let's see if I can approximate. I haven't practiced this. So
you didn't practice it?
No, it's not one that I'm accustomed to trying.
All
here
right.
We go. Ah! Okay, Ray. You can settle down now. That was it.
Do that again.
Here we go. Ah! Ah! Can I say monotonous and annoying?
That's a common call in the newsroom, I'll tell you that, before coffee is served. All right, one more time, and then we'll
there
get
we
to
go.
The phones.
Ah! All right, that's an approximation. If I were out there, I would be mystified, but...
All right, well, let's see if anybody gets it. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today. Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike, you're on.
After many years of having this birdhouse in the fence in our yard, we're downtown Saratoga Springs, I noticed some birds finally moved in this year, and it's a two-part question. Number one... I started watching my binoculars, just kind of fun watching them feed their babies going in and out of the birdhouse. And I noticed they go in with the bug. Oh, they're house wrens, by the way. House wrens.
House
wrens,
right.
Oftentimes, they come out with something white.
Like, yes.
I don't know and I was curious what that was. And secondly, how can we make sure they come back again next year and make their house there again?
Okay, good idea. First of all, what they're carrying out of there is nature's disposable diaper.
Okay.
Yeah. it's called a fecal sac, technically, yes. And it's a way of house cleaning that's very, very effective when you stop and think about it. It's a good idea to keep that house tidied up. And They'll take that, and interestingly, if you watch them, they'll take it, and quite often we'll find a stream or a pond and drop it down in there, so they're not leaving a footprint behind, so to speak.
Yeah, I was wondering. I had a feeling it was some kind of waste.
Yeah, it is, and okay. and if you have a dark color car that looks from the air like a little pool of water, what a mess!
Oh boy!
Yeah, they kind of target okay. that too, and as far as having them come back, it's easy. Just leave the birdhouse where it was. It worked okay. before, and there's a good likelihood birds return to where they were born for the most part.
Okay.
The offspring of this year's family will be back next year. If it's occupied, they'll move on. They'll find another place nearby. And if not, they'll move in and take it over. So
all
birds
right.
like to come back home.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Peter in Poughkeepsie. Peter, you're on Vox Pop with the one and only Rich Guthrie.
Thank you. My question is, how can you tell the difference on the ground between a hawk and a falcon?
Huh.
Well, that's a tough question because, until recently, they were kind of synonymous. But now that, they're taxonomous out there, and this just came out. This is breaking news for those who sit and study these sorts of things. They've moved the falcons away from the hawks and closer to the woodpeckers and along with the parrots. So the parrots and falcons as separate groups have moved taxonomically down up the tree of life in the taxonomic hierarchy. Yeah. So, but the difference between the two of them is when they're in the air, it's quite easy. The falcons have pointy wings that sort of angle back to some extent and look very streamlined with a slim body and a long tail, those pointy wings. On the ground, it depends on the falcon because falcons have their own distinctive form from the peregrine falcon to the American kestrel. They tend to stand a little more vertical, and the wings will tend to be folded in a different manner so that you can actually see the pointy tips of the wings down by the tail.
Huh.
And the head tends to be blockier, square in overall profile. So,
well, there you go.
Well, I hope that helps, Peter.
Peter, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Now we go over to Jeannie in Catskill. Hi, Jeannie.
Hey, Mr. Guthrie, could I ask you about hummingbirds?
Certainly.
I've got a group of them here. I had two last year. I have four this year. And there's an aerial battle goes on every morning. To get to the nectar feeder, and I'm wondering if I put an extra feeder up, if it will make more war, or if it will calm them out and go two to each feeder. What do you think?
Well, first of all, it's while we may be uncomfortable with the shenanigans of these guys and gals out there, their territorial disputes, it's natural in their realm. And it's not a bad thing for them to go through this dance, this aerial dance that the hummingbirds do to claim their little corner of the world. And to answer your question, yes, it certainly will help if they had another feeder to go to and spend their time at that. So they're not. But I would put it on the other side of the house, let's say, so that.
Oh, you would.
Yeah. So there'd be a distinct distance between the two.
Right, right. Well, I just want to tell you that this year, the nicest thing that I've done is have a bluebird box installed, and I'm hoping that some will nest there next year.
It's a
lovely box made of old barn siding.
Oh, right. That's good material to use.
And why?
Why? Because it has a rough texture to it.
Right.
And also has aired for a while, so a lot of the resins and the like have been
right.
Dissipated.
We put it on a very old post too, so hopefully it will be an attraction.
Well, if the dimensions are correct, and I would assume that they were, since it was one made that you had made for you by somebody who knows what they're doing, and
right.
I'm all for it. You're going to I would imagine that you're in for a bluebird family next year.
Oh, happiness! Okay, thank you so much, Mr.
Okay.
Jeannie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ray. Bye.
Bye. You know, it begs the question, what are the proper dimensions for a bluebird house?
Well, the most important one is the diameter of the nest hole.
Yeah.
It's got to be 1.5 inches in diameter.
Really?
Really.
I mean, within a very limited tolerance?
Well, the reason for that is that otherwise the starlings will move in if it's too large.
Okay.
And if it's too small, the bluebirds won't fit.
Okay.
So 1.5 inches is the critical diameter, and the rest of it could be 8 or 10 inches in depth and four inches across, but that's the most critical dimension.
Very interesting. You know, getting back to Jeannie's comment about the hummingbirds, I have never seen so many as I have seen around our house this year, and we don't have feeders. We just have nice flowers.
Yeah,
and
nice flowers, yeah.
And they're all around.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, the trick is, you know, where do they nest? They build the tiniest little nest with an M&M-size egg that fits four of them, or three of them, that will fit into that nest. It's really incredible.
It is incredible. All right, let's take a break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. 800-348-2551. More Talk for the Boys coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from SPAC, presenting the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra July 25th with conductor Joanne Folletta and Michael Ludwig violin performing Smetana, Mozart, and Dvorak. Sponsored by First Niagara, SPAC.org. Laurie Stilwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, featuring The Grow Show, an exhibition of Berkshire Bounty with design, horticulture, and photography divisions, August 4th and 5th, berkshirebotanical.org. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties, hvfa.com.
That's lovely, boys. That's Count Basie and the orchestra. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Rich, you were asking me a question just before the mic opened. I don't know what it was. If it's not a dirty word, you can ask me over the air. I don't care.
I was going to ask that tune.
Count Basie's Flight of the Foo Birds. Flight of the Foo Birds.
Foo Birds.
Yeah, 1958 or so.
Yeah, okay.
Lovely.
Right, lovely.
Okay, so, the mystery bird call.
Right,
let's do it again. Let's do it one more time.
Okay. Wait, as you see now, I'm corrupting it because it's along those lines.
All right, try it one more time.
Ah!
Okay, that's the mystery bird call, and I just, you know, I like to hear it, frankly, whether you get it or not, but take a stab.
Go for it.
We'll have Rich make that sound a bit more later in the show.
And I might tell you the answer if somebody...
All right, Linda, you're up next. Linda, hi.
Hi. You know, I'm her husband anyway.
Oh, hi.
Okay, quick question. Okay.
Yes, sir.
About a year ago, I ended up with a female cardinal because the cat got a hold of it. And it seemed like the wing was, I don't know if it was broken or what. There's a couple feathers at the end when she closes her wing that stick up still. And I built kind of a big cage, and she seems to be able to fly in there now. It's been about a year. How am I going to know if I let her go? I don't want to just let her go.
Well, let me say this, that first of all, you ain't allowed to do that. Not good. As well-meaning as that is, I have to tell you this. This is a sort of like the technical side of things. It ain't allowed.
Right.
Why?
There's a series of federal and international laws against keeping wild birds for any reason.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons that is under that umbrella of can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing to do is locate a licensed wildlife rehabilitator. Now, they have the techniques and tricks for assessing the situation and determining whether or not that bird is releasable and how to go about taking care of that end.
How do I do that?
Well, in Massachusetts, there's a list of wildlife rehabilitators, and I was just trying to bring it up on the internet here, and I'm not having any luck yet. But there is a list, and the Department of Environmental Protection over there in Massachusetts will administers that list, and they'll be able to provide you with the names and contact information for those rehabilitators.
Okay.
Okay. All right, very good. Thank
hey,
you.
Thanks very much.
Good luck
husband.
With that, and thanks for taking care of that bird. I know it's a terrible thing, but
yeah,
you
got to
do what you got to do. And
right.
In some instances, I say go for it, but I got to put the caveat on there.
Okay.
It ain't allowed.
All right, so I have to ask,
what
sort of draconian regulation would lead to say, hey, if there's a bird that's hurt in your lawn, you can't do anything about it?
Well, the reason for that is well-meaning, well-intentioned, and I support it. And that is not everybody is as altruistic as Linda's husband was.
Right.
And people will make reasons to keep a bird in captivity as a pet.
I see.
And they make lovely pets. And it's to suppress the pet trade so that there isn't a proliferation of wild birds in cages and also other nefarious goals of some people that might have feather collecting or making fish lures out of wild bird feathers, that kind of thing.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and Bill and Hurley. Bill, how are you?
Hi. What a wonderful day in Hurley. It's beautiful for a change.
Well, and here, too.
Yes, yes. My question is, I have this bald blue jay that shows up at my feeder, and he's completely bald from the neck up, and it's really distressing looking. I mean, it's pretty weird. How and what's going on there?
Nothing to be concerned about. It's an annual event with a lot of these birds. All birds go through a feather molt. They lose all their feathers and replace them.
But not all
every
at the same time, though, right?
Not all at the same time, and not as in the case of the blue jay and some other birds, such as the cardinal and the like, will replace them, let's say, on the head all at once. Mm-hmm. And that's
Completely, stark from the neck up. And boy, does that look strange.
and let me tell you, he feels goofy, too. But but he'll get over it. And in a week or two, the feathers will be grown back and that guy will be all right.
I'd like to take a crack at that sound that you're making.
Okay.
Well, I bet you sound like the kind of guy that would know what this is. What do you got there?
I've heard, I don't know if it's a raven or a crow, but sometimes when they're sitting still, they make this very odd little guttural sound like that. I didn't know that. Maybe my guess was correct.
It's a good guess, and you're right about that. And thinking about it, you're very close, but not what I had.
Oh, I think you should make the sound again.
let me give you the sound of the raven. They have a sound that goes ark, ark, and they lots of variations to that tune.
Okay,
but this is a ah. Sorry about that, Bill.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Kate in Glens Falls. Kate, hi.
Hi.
You're on.
Hi. I'm wondering about my birdhouse, which we've had for many years. And for many years, there were birds every spring, several generations throughout the spring and early summer. And then one year, nobody.
Mm.
And I, cast about and I asked about it, and the next year, again, nobody.
Mm.
And someone said, you should clean them out every year. So I got up on a ladder, and I opened up the birdhouse, because it has a hinged lid on the top, and cleaned out all the stuff that was in there, and put the lid back down. But 3 years later, still nothing.
Well, I don't know.
Decided it wasn't a good place? I don't know.
No, if it worked before, it ought to work again. What kind of birdhouse was it? What are we talking about?
It was one my son made in middle school for a project.
Uh-huh.
And we thought the hole was too small, so we made it bigger, and they were getting in and out just fine for years.
And
every year they seem to clean it out themselves, which is why I had never thought to do that.
Right, they will do that. And to me, it's a good thing to clean them out, if nothing else, just to evict the mice that might have moved in.
No mice. It's way up high on top of a pole.
Oh, that doesn't slow down the mice. They'll get up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Truly.
And it might have been some other critters, flying squirrels or red squirrels or other things that might have gotten in there while you're walking.
We also have hawks in our neighborhood.
Oh, that shouldn't do it. They birds and hawks live together in the forest and woods and backyards all along. I mean, there is a certain issue between them, but that shouldn't deter them from nesting. Hmm.
So it's just a mystery. Is there anything I can do to make it more attractive again?
Well, I'm wondering if the vegetation might have changed. Have the trees grown taller, overshadowed?
No, we have an elderly maple on one side. There's a newer maple on the other.
Uh-huh.
The bittersweet that these birds seem to feed on has grown much bigger in this point of time, but that I wouldn't think it. I mean, could it be the lichen that has grown up on the top of the birdhouse?
No, not likely. Likely the lichen. But take care of that bittersweet. If I were you,
I have incredible bittersweet.
That might be
I have two long fences worth.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Getting better all the time.
Better?
But better.
So take care of it by, you mean trimming it back?
I was saying trimming it.
We trim because there are people on either side, and also by trimming, there seem to be more berries.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well,
but I had one other question. If there's nothing else on the birdhouse, you can tell me.
Not at the moment. I'll be thinking while you're asking your next question. Go ahead.
We've had some robins this year. We have a bungalow kind of house, and it has sort of supports that come out under the roof, triangular sort of things. And I watched a pair of robins trying to build something. For 5 days, they kept putting things up there, and the nesting materials, they would get, like, a lot up there, and it would come down over and over and over again.
Well,
and I was thinking, oh, God, is this something I should do? Are they dumb? Are they young? And I left them alone, and we went away on vacation. We came back. There was a full nest.
Oh, good.
Now they are there. I know that there are babies because I've seen the eggshells on the driveway. But for long, long, long periods of the day, they aren't there. Every other nesting pair I've seen has been, you know, there feeding, and there. But this is like for 2.5, 3 hours. Nobody there. But then they'll be there.
Okay, well,
is that normal, or are they just young?
Well, I think it sounds to me like an inexperienced pair, but as long as they keep coming back and taking care of feeding the young when the time demands, things should be okay. I would keep an eye on it, and next year, let's hope that they'll figure a better place to build a nest and get an earlier start on the nesting season.
All right. Kate, we're going to move it along.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you. We appreciate it. To Jane and Lennox. Jane, you're on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie.
We've had two red hawks, a pair of red hawks, who they're so much fun to watch. We've had them for at least two years, and in the winter when there's no leaves, they sit side by side on the same branch in the same tree day after day. And we see them a little bit this time of year. There's one that I see soaring way up high. And in the last 2 days, it's been crying and calling. And I'm just wondering, do they mate for life? And is he looking for his mate? Or, I mean, normally they're hunting and they're silent, but this one was making all kinds of noise.
Well, it's probably, my thinking is that it's probably got the young out of the nest. And when they're seeing you, red-tailed hawks will give that alarm call many times when there are people or another, what they perceive to be intrusion on their territory. And it's amongst themselves or to the young or perhaps just allowed to themselves that they give that typical, broadcasting call of theirs.
Really carries.
Oh, well, that's the one that they dub. They use as a voiceover for the eagle on television.
Really?
Yeah, they fake it. They put the sound of the red tail because it sounds so much more convincing than the real call of an eagle. The eagle call, incidentally, was one I likened to somebody tickling a chicken.
Can we hear it? Come on, this is what I love about this show. He's going to do an eagle call, everybody.
Well,
gather round, children.
It goes.
Do they mate for life?
Yes, they do. They pair for life, and the likelihood is it's the same mom and pop that have been there, and they live a long time. They were good for 15, 20 years or even longer in the wild.
Well, Well, one has a white breast and one has kind of a mottled breast. I mean, you can definitely see them, and they sit side by side up on a branch. It's so much fun to watch them.
Well, good for you. You have a real good opportunity there. And you'll notice, too, that the female is larger than the male. You can tell them apart that way as well.
Oh, okay. I thought bittersweet was an invasive plant.
It is. It's very... Alien bittersweet is definitely an invasive plant, and one that some birds do like it for sure, but it's one that can overtake a garden and do some severe damage to the native plants.
Right, that's for the gardening show, though. So, but that's a good point.
Yes,
thanks, Jane. We appreciate it.
Because you were talking about it.
Thanks, right. Right.
But anyway, well, thank you very much. So
goodbye.
I won't worry about the hawk.
No, don't worry about them. Enjoy them.
Okie doke. Thanks, Jane. Let's go for some more hawk talk. It's Nan in Round Top. Nan.
Hi, I have a question related to the last caller.
Okay.
We have a pair of red-tailed hawks that nest in our backwoods every year, it seems like. But this year, we believe it's a female juvenile. It's quite large. She's been hanging around the house just calling and calling. It's been going on for over a month now, and it's driving us crazy.
You're driving you crazy. Oh.
We're wondering what... The problem is it seems like it's been going on so long, it's not still looking for its mother to feed it.
Yeah, could very well be.
Really? That long?
That long. And they'll, if that's the case, it will move on for sure.
Yeah? Okay.
So, but that's... pay attention to it. It's a kind of like an interesting phenomenon to watch, the interaction between young and adult hawks.
Well, the adults are long since gone. It's just the juvenile that seems to be hanging around. We think it's the juvenile. But
you can tell if it's a young one or not by the color of the tail. They don't get that red tail until they are full adults.
Yeah, I don't think it's fully red tail.
Right. The tail would be the same color as the back if otherwise,
yeah,
on the younger birds.
Yep, I think it's a juvenile then.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's probably begging for food, and if nobody's serving it up and it's still hanging out, then chances are it's taking care of itself. It's
we've seen it hunting, or I have. I've seen it go for mice and stuff in the yard, but and there's a squirrel tail in the yard. So
all right.
I'm assuming it's successful, but it just doesn't seem to want to shut up.
Oh, interesting.
Well, pity that. I don't know why it should be vocal at this time and actually alone if you've had the adult pair in the same neighborhood where they might have gone.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that your bird call? Is it a type of hawk?
No.
Nope.
But that's a good guess.
Okay.
Thanks, Nan.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Bye. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, it's Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show. And we go to line four. On line four, I'm sorry, I cannot read your name. Is Cicada, is that it?
Claudia?
Yes, that's it.
Claudia?
It's Cicada, you're right.
Oh, okay, very good.
Hi there, Cicada.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great.
Excellent. I have one question and a guess at the call, and another question if you have time.
All right.
Sure, we're here.
All right. So I have a pair of, I just moved into a house that we have a nook up next to the front door, old barn, old farm-style house in Western Mass. And we've had a pair of barn swallows, apparently, that have been living there for about 2 years, come back every year and remake their nest. And they're back again for the second time this season. Does this mean that it's the same pair and they clutch more than once a year? I've looked into this and I can't find it. Or is this a new pair?
Well, it's hard to answer precisely because barn swallows, while we talked earlier about the hawks pairing for life, barn swallows don't stick to the same sort of rules. So it could be the same pair. The likelihood is that it is the same pair, but it could also be another pair or found another mate. So, but they will build a second nest or lay a second clutch and raise a second brood. So, that part I think is a safe bet that it's the same pair and back for another chance to raise another family.
Very nice. Okay.
Interesting.
Now you have an answer to our bird question, our bird call.
Yeah, is that a cormorant?
Oh, no. Oh, no, boy. But you know what? They sound very similar. Where do you run into cormorants in Hadley that you would hear them? Wow, that's pretty cool.
No, I spend a lot of time in Maine.
Right. Okay. Very good. Hey, that's a good guess. I like that. Yeah. Maybe you know what?
Wait a minute, hold it. Now you got him thinking.
Yeah, right. I was just listening to cormorants the other day, and they do sound like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, good guess there.
Well, thanks
Cicada.
A lot. We appreciate it very much.
Yeah, and if you happen to have a second for another bird call question?
Very quickly, then we have to take a break, okay. But go ahead.
All right. I've been hearing this one around, and I can't identify which bird it is. It sounds like a water drop and then a warble.
Do it again.
Okay.
Do it again.
Yeah, all right.
So there's a little drop, and then there's that whistle sound.
It's a good description. Yep. Cicada, you got me there.
Now, you stumped the band, Cicada. This is great. I love this.
That's not great, Ray.
This is very good. Thank you very much for the call. Maybe somebody else will have that answer.
Yeah,
and let's.
I got to work on that one, though.
Let's take a break with some more Count Basie, and Rich will figure it all out.
Support for WAMC comes from historic Huguenot Street, New Paltz, 18th-century French settlement with Dutch-influenced stone houses, a reconstructed 1717 church, burial ground, guided tours, programs and events through October, HuguenotStreet.org. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, CurranCompliance.com. Ventford Hall, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Clara, a summer play about the life of Clara Schumann, wife of Robert, mother of eight, and concert pianist, through September 2nd, gildedage.org. And Berkshire Medical Center's Joint Replacement Program, private rooms, pre-surgical education, rehabilitation, program coordinator, and six orthopedic surgeons, 413-395-7680.
Rich Guthrie's here. It is Vox Pop. It is the Bird Show. We do it every month or so. 800-348-2551 is our number. And Rich has done a mystery bird call for us. No one's gotten it so far. Rich, let's hear it one more time.
There we go. Here we go. All right. Ah! Ah! Now, let me add a little bit to that at this point. Now, it took me a long time to find the source of that. In fact, I never did.
What?
I found the parent, however.
So you know what kind of bird this is, right?
Yeah, well, yes.
Okay.
I didn't see the little guy, and the reason for that, it was too darn dark out there.
Oh, that's a hint.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so it sounds like this. Caw, caw, right?
No.
No? Do it again, then.
Ah! Ah!
All right, let's go.
And it was very persistent and annoying, and if you have one nearby you, congratulations and enjoy.
All right, let's go to the phones. It's a silly show. Jack in Hillsdale. Jack, you're up.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey.
I don't have a guess, but I was wondering if you could maybe identify an attempt at a call that I've been wondering about for quite some time.
Okay, I hope you do a better job at it than Ray just
hey,
did.
Hey, well, you know.
Yeah, right. Go ahead. What do you got?
So it sounds like a plastic tube being spun around, if you know that sound.
Oh, yeah.
And it has a, let's see, like a...
Yeah.
But it's more metallic and more dimensional. It's sort of, you can hear the rotation.
And
you know what that is?
Let me give a couple of questions just so we can. You're in a wooded area and it's coming from the woods.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say that what you're describing is a veery, which is very. It has that three-dimensional sound to it. And a spiraling aspect to it, where it seems to be going down the scales, three notes simultaneously down the scale.
That sounds pretty. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Okay, good.
Yes. Right. So it's a veery. And anything about that bird that
sure,
you wish
to
comment on?
It's one of our brown thrushes, deep woods family of birds that. Their family, it's a family known for their musical qualities. The wood thrush, the hermit thrush, and some of the mountaintop thrushes like the Bicknells and Swainson's thrushes. So delightful birds to have around. And they tend to sing towards twilight, towards dusk or early in the morning. And again, it's the Very, V-E-E-R-Y, likes wet woods.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, good Jack.
Stuff. Thanks.
Appreciate it. It's Dick's turn in this unit. Dick, you're on.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Hi. I'm in the Avon Crest area. We get a few hummingbirds during the year, but not a lot.
Okay.
We have hanging lantana up to attract them. And normally, if we get more than one, they're fighting. They're never happy together. So if a second one shows up, it usually attacks.
Well, that's their nature. It's really not fighting as it is just kind of like dispute resolution.
Yeah. Well, my question is this morning, while we were in our screen room eating breakfast, two showed up together, and one of them appeared to hang upside down from the hanging lantana plant, while the other one went around sucking out pollen. And I had never seen that before, and it was a little difficult to see because we were inside of a screen room. I went and got my camcorder, and I'm charging up the battery for when they show up again.
YouTube
on batteries.
But they haven't shown up anyway since the second time. I said they don't come very often. Hummingbirds just started to come around here like 2 weeks ago.
Well, good for you, but I can't explain the upside down behavior. It's not normal.
No.
So
interesting though.
Interesting. I suspect perhaps it got its foot caught on something and managed to free it loose. But you know, they have very tiny feet. I can't explain an upside down. It's aerodynamically, it just doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, it wasn't eating. It was difficult to tell whether the other one was actually trying to feed it. I wondered whether one was I can't imagine that it would be feeding it out in the field like that. It should be feeding it in a nest.
Yes, right. That would be the normal. So
I'm going to try and get...
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, keep that battery charged.
I'm going to try and get a picture of it anyway.
All right, thanks, okay, Dick. We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Judy in Westfield. Judy.
Yes, I have a question about robins. I saw their robin make a nest in a star magnolia tree right by my kitchen window on around June 9th. And then I knew when the babies were born around June 23rd. And then I kept seeing the mother and father feed them for 2 weeks. And then I saw them, at least one of the robins, leave the nest 2 weeks later, I think around July 8th. And then the next day I just saw one of them standing on a nest. And since then, I haven't seen them anywhere. And I was wondering where they went. Now, right near my house, across the street, there are woods. So I'm just wondering where all the robins went.
Well, that's a good question. And what happens is with robins and swallows and orioles and other birds, they hang around the nest area for a little while, and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
G-O-N, they're gone. They're someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is with many of these birds, they'll gather in small groups of extended family and beyond and find a favorable feeding area. And where you might have had four or five robins, you'll now have 20 to 25 robins. And swallows, the same thing. They'll find an open field where they'll gather on the power lines or in the phragmites down by the water's edge, which, by the way, is going on now. Nearby water, the swallows are just swarming in by the hundreds and thousands and gathering in the evening at their favorite roost. So it's a wonderful phenomenon to watch.
Okay. Maybe it was really interesting. And then I had one other question. I found a dead blue jay in my yard about 2 days ago, and I was wondering, you know, it looked really healthy. I was wondering what could have killed it or what happened to it.
Well, it's hard to say without a little more information, but any possibility it might have flown into a window.
Okay.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's one of the one of the major sources of bird mortalities out there. So that would be my suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
There are other possibilities, but that's the most likely in my mind.
Thanks, Judy. A bird could drop dead of old age, just like a person, right?
For every egg that hatches, a bird dies.
Oh, I like that. Very poetic. Chris in Remsen. Chris, you're on.
Hi. I got a question. Okay. Well, I want to take a stab at the question.
Oh,
is it a
ahead.
Dead bird?
Yeah, right. What's
Hang
got?
On, Chris. Make him do the sound again.
Do the sound because I hear it.
Okay.
I sit in my backyard and he sits on the tree and it's just what he sounds
Go ahead.
Like.
Uh-oh. Oh, that's not it.
That was not it.
Is it the catbird?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Do it again, though, Rich.
Like
you didn't make the sound.
Sounding.
Give her another try. You didn't make the sound.
Ah!
Yes, it's what he sounds like.
Well,
it's very annoying.
Well,
Rich's or the bird?
Pardon me? No, he's not. Okay. The bird is.
Okay.
A catbird is a lot to me, anyway. To me, it's a delightful sound. I love the sound
you
of the
love
catbird.
Not me.
Oh,
not
my.
Well, he doesn't have to live by it.
I've got a question about Robin.
Okay.
How many times, what do you call them, broods? Like chickens?
Broods,
how many times?
Yes.
I think they're on the third time. Is that possible?
Yes, it is.
For summer?
Yeah, a lot of birds will do that.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah. They'll because you know what, this is a critically important time of year for them. They gotta replenish the numbers. As we said before, there's a lot of things that go on out there in nature that takes its toll, and the birds have to keep up with the numbers. And the robins are very successful at that. That's why.
And it's amazing because I live in a log house. I have two cats and a dog, and they nest right on my front porch.
Yeah.
So we're sitting out there all the time. My cats are out there, and they come back every year.
Yeah,
amazing.
Well, good for the robins, and we want to have to talk about those cats at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they don't bother them. They don't. They really don't.
Okay.
And you had a person on your station, John Young, talking about the book he wrote, What the Robin Knows.
Oh, really?
And it's very interesting. Oh. It is. I learned a lot from that book.
Well, robins keep a sharp eye out.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
So you are going to tell us what that annoying bird is.
Absolutely.
What do you mean annoying?
Before the end of the show, within 9 minutes, we will tell you. Thank you.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You.
Annoying is in the eye of the ear of the beholder.
I suppose. Bob in West Taconic, is it?
Yeah.
How are you?
Okay, good. I got a question about owls. We used to have a pair that came around about 3 years ago, and at night you'd hear them giving a soft hoot, you know, to each other.
Oh, really? Cool.
But they're not been around for a while, and I'm thinking of placing a house out there, and I'm wondering what, you know, where would be the best place for information about how to make one and also where to place it?
Okay, well, interesting you should mention that, because just last night I was listening to the owls outside of my house. And I picked them up, by the way, in case you're interested, on a baby room monitor. I put the baby pod outside and the mommy pod inside and turn it on. And through the night, you'll hear these wonderful sounds. That includes the sound of the eastern screech owl, which I'll give a little imitation for.
Now you're going to confuse things.
No. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
And then they have that little wobble that goes like... Anyway, I was listening to that musical serenade last night.
Huh? That's great.
Yeah, and the owl that you have, if it sounds more like a tooting or a tugboat whistle, that sounds like the saw-whet owl, which is a delightful tiny little owl. As many people call it, one of the cutest birds out there, but very hard to see. You can build a nest box, and they will use it. The best designs are imitation of the wood duck nest box, which there are plenty of details out there on the internet. Nest box for the wood duck.
All right.
And putting it in the woods facing where you can see the opening is a great thing to do.
All right, Bob, we're going to move it along here, and we go to Tracy in Gilderland. Tracy.
Yes, hi there.
Hi there.
So the first thing, I just have to say that anytime anybody ever says that the birds in their neighborhood are too noisy or whatever, I always reply, well, you come back to me when they're ever noisier than humans.
Oh, all right. That's a good point.
Because there's never been a sound that a bird made that I wasn't eager to hear, so I just have to throw that out there.
Okay,
and,
Tracy, I love you.
I love you, too, and I wanted to make a guess, and is it one of the juvenile owls?
You're right. That's it.
I don't believe it.
Tracy,
somebody actually got it.
I knew you could do it, Tracy.
Well, I'll tell you, I grew up with horses on a farm, and we had a lot of different owls. It was down actually in Westchester County. And because we were in the barn, you know, late doing barn checks at 11 at night, and then, you know, early up for horse shows and stuff, we used to see a lot of owls and hear a lot of owls. And I can remember that sound from when I was young, but I still don't know which one.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
You know, you hear that out there, and the little guy is very, because anytime you approach it, it dummies up in a hurry.
Right.
And of course, he's out there in the darkness. So it just so happened that the other night I was driving around not far from Guilderland, New York, and actually over in, well, I forget where I was.
Yeah.
I was in Queeman's Hollow.
Okay.
And I heard the sound as I was driving down this road at night. I was listening for whippoorwills, and sure enough, there it was. But I couldn't find the bird, for, you know, not surprising. But there on the pole right next to me on the highway was the adult great horned owl.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Terrific.
That would be great to see. Well, I have to tell you just quickly, I drive a school bus, and every kid on my bus by the end of the year can identify about 25 different birds.
All right, Tracy.
Way to go, Tracy. Hey, Tracy, thanks a lot for the call. Sarah in Schuylerville. Sarah.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question, and also I had a guess, though I would have been wrong. I was going to guess the grackle.
Uh-huh. You're right. You would have been wrong.
My question is, do you know the difference between the call of a eastern wood peewee and a phoebe? My mom and I are arguing as to what we have.
It's an eastern wood peewee and a phoebe.
Yes.
Yep.
Both of them say their name.
Okay.
One of them very clearly, and the other one sort of like a sneezy rendition of its name.
Okay.
So the Phoebe says a sneezy Phoebe.
I beg your pardon?
I see. Good night. And the Peewee says its name. It's a delightful. What we have done was a delightful imitation of its song by giving it a name. And it goes like this. I'll do that. All ready? Did that come through okay?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know if that's it then. It sounds more scratchy, and it's not as pretty as that.
Right. That would be the Phoebe.
Oh, okay.
And if it's around the house, it's more likely that's what it was. The peewee likes the deep woods. It's a treetop bird of the thicker woods.
Okay. My mom was right then. Uh-oh.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, bye.
Let's squeeze one more or two more in here. Stephanie and Saugerty. Stephanie, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Oh, yes. Hi. I have two quick questions.
Okay, sure.
One is, I've been seeing the mountain bluebird in my yard. I'm in Saugerties in a wooded area. And I lift him up, and I see that he's really not, he's usually on the west and
right.
Not in the east.
Right.
And, other people been seeing him?
No. And get a picture. And,
yeah.
And you're going to have to convince the skeptics.
What kind of birds?
Mountain
it's
bluebird.
A mountain bluebird. It's not the indigo bunting, because we have that also.
Yeah.
It's definitely the mountain bluebird. We've seen him before, just flying through for an instant. But
yeah.
This year, he must like our seed because he's been staying around. He's been here for about a month
okay.
now.
Well, it's not what it is. I'll
what
say
is
that.
It?
Why?
I don't know what
it's
it is.
Not, is it unheard of that would be in
well,
this
you know, funny you should mention.
It's iridescent blue, all blue.
Okay.
It's not an American bluebird.
Right.
And I've looked it up year after year because I only see it for an instant.
Yeah.
And it says mountain bluebird.
Fascinating.
Well, not.
Rich doesn't believe you, Stephanie, but I
picture,
believe
but
you.
Here's the story. Years ago, back in 1970-something, I was driving a back road not far from Saugerties, and sure enough, there was a mountain bluebird.
Okay.
So they do happen. However, it was a one-time thing. It hasn't happened in that area since, and people came from all over.
Yeah, the same thing has happened to us. I haven't seen it in about 5 years.
Yep.
And
okay.
I only saw it for an instant. So, you know, I really think it's the mountain bluebird.
Well.
Also, I have another quick question.
Sure.
We have some regular American.
Oh, you know, we're just about, I got to say, Stephanie,
okay.
I apologize, but we are out of time. I'm having
okay.
so much fun listening to all the bird calls and having Rich argue with people that I lost track of time.
We're getting yelled at by the engineer.
Yeah, we're all done, Stephanie. Thanks a lot, and thanks to everybody who called in. So, Rich, you know, if Stephanie saw a mountain bluebird, and you say no, but yet you saw one 5 years ago. What the heck?
I know, except there's a difference. And the proof is in the picture. Send me the picture, Geltic@capital.net, or at the Times Union blog, timesunion.com, BLOG.
Thank you, Bird. Rich, very much. A great show and lots of fun today. Support for Vox Pop comes from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York.
Investing in Education, Financial Stability, and Health, UnitedWayGCR.org. Bra and Girl, 35 Railroad Street, Great Barrington, and North Street at Crawford Square, Pittsfield, a bra and lingerie boutique for women offering private fittings in sizes from 28A to 52H, braandgirl.com. Bard Summerscape, presenting Emmanuel Chabrier's comic opera, The King in Spite of Himself, directed by Thaddeus Strasburger, July 27th through August 5th, fishercenter.bard.edu, and Berkshire Museum, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, Rethink American Indian Art, featuring contemporary works by Native American artists as well as historic objects this summer, berkshiremuseum.org. That's it for the show. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Christy Carton answered the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I am Ray Graff. We're done for the week. Moyers and Company tomorrow, and then Medical Monday on Monday. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned for a news update.